to Building Utah. I'm your host, Kimberly Flores, and today we're joined by John McClurg, Vice President of Cylance. John, thanks for being here today.
No, it's a pleasure.
So we're having you on the show today because you're going to be our closing keynote speaker at the Salt Lake Chamber Cybersecurity Conference that's coming up. But before we get into what you're going to be talking to the audience about there, I kind of wanted to go through your cybersecurity background. I mentioned you're the vice president of Cylance. Tell us a little bit about what Cylance is and what you do there.
Actually, I'm what we call our ambassador at large, which is an ominous sounding title.
Oh, okay, ambassador at large.
Actually, until recently, I was Michael Dell's chief security officer.
Right.
And before that, was with Honeywell in that same capacity and with Bell Labs Lucent before that. And of course, before that, I spent a decade in government service with the FBI. Was actually one of the early cyber warriors that got thrown into the deep end of the cyber pond before we really knew exactly what was going on. The internet was just being born, but we had already seen what we called freakers. We're attacking the phone systems. And so I went up against one of the early freakers and in that capacity acquired an expertise over the years that the private sector eventually valued.
Caught on to.
And basically, in that capacity, found myself, notwithstanding my wishes to be proactively preventative, always in the world of reactive detection.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite frustrating. So what happened is I eventually came across an artificial intelligence machine learning capability that blew my socks off, blew the community socks off. Saved the day at OPM, the congressional the OPM breach, grabbed my attention and my fascination, and not too long after that, actually struck up a relationship with the CEO, the founder of this young startup, and the rest is history now. I've now traveled the globe sharing the message of the prowess and strength of what AI can bring to us. We hear a lot of ominous clarion calls of caution about AI that can throw fear into the souls of some, but there's a positive side and edge to that that we really need to capitalize on, and that's what I do with Cylance.
Let's work backwards then, because I want to start with the freakers and your time at the FBI.
Sure.
Mr. Polson, and I wrote down his name here, Dark Dante. This is back in the 90s, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
The internet was just coming online, and he kind of cracked into to Pac Bell, Pacific Bell, by actually breaking in, correct? Breaking into the agency and stealing their manuals.
Yeah, thank you. So, for a 30-year-old rusty lock.
Yeah.
You know, a physical vulnerability giving way to undermining cyber interests, and we saw the flip side of that coin, cyber vulnerabilities in SCADA systems undermining a physical world interest like water distribution or something like that.
Right.
So it was really because of Dark Dante that I got insights into an emerging paradigm of the way physical and cyber interdependencies were growing ever more connected. But it was his exploits that opened my eyes to that when I saw him picking that 30-year-old rusty lock to gain access to the central office of the phone company.
How did you catch him?
Well, we actually used America's Most Wanted. Remember that old TV show?
Yeah, I do remember that.
In fact, my dad was an ethics professor in a computer science department. I gave him heads up that he ought to have his students watch it. In fact, they did, because we were trying to get, we didn't have our arms on the kid yet.
Right.
I asked him afterwards how the students liked the show, and there was this pregnant pause. I said, Dad, did you hear me? Did the students like the show? And he said, yeah, I heard you. I think they liked it, but I have to tell you, I'm not sure they're rooting for you.
Oh.
We've come a long way since those days.
Right, right. How have things changed since then?
Well, I mean, from not having any sorts of forensics tools to speak of at the time, now what we had to figure out and start from scratch in doing in terms of the basic imaging of Dark Dante's hard drive, we had to figure out how to do that. We were concerned also about things like data bombs. Even if we got the image made, if we booted up on the image, would there be a data bomb in there that would go off the minute we tried to access the data? There are all these basic, very fundamental questions that we really hadn't traversed before. So we were blazing new territory. So it was both exciting and somewhat scary at the same time, because a lot was at stake, and we were treading new territory.
And from that territory kind of turned into this, and you mentioned water a little bit, but cyber terrorism. How real is that threat today, and what are we looking at?
Well, I think a discussion of cyber terrorism needs to ground itself well in a definition of what terrorism is, because otherwise it gets broad and, and unmanageable. Terrorism acts really have at their heart the goal or objective of striking fear and apprehension into a society to the point where they modify or change their behaviors in a way that undermines the culture and the society being attacked by the terrorists.
Right.
That's a very technical definition.
Yes, but that is terrorism.
And yet you see the proliferation of and the role that ransomware is mm-hmm. like striking right now. Clearly, the perpetrators of that, for the most part, are seeking the remuneration of their ill-gotten gains. They're just doing
right.
it for the money.
Right.
And yet, the unintended consequences of some of those very pervasive attacks right now is that it is capturing the attention and the imaginations of the rank and file, the population generally, and in a way that inserts into their daily lives a sense of unsettledness, fear, the very objective that a terrorist would normally want to achieve.
Right.
So if your criminal, your criminals out there seeking just good old-fashioned lucre are capable of inserting that kind of sentiment into the population, it's not hard for mm-hmm. a terrorist-minded group
sure.
who are looking just to insert that fear, that uncertainty to advance that. And clearly doing that through an attack on core infrastructure upon which societies, you know, often take for granted, but
yeah.
you know, depend.
Our energy grid or water.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Traffic control systems, mm-hmm. anything like that. There's just a very rich environment for some would-be terrorists, cyber terrorists, to target and advance. And with the Internet of Everything, which is what I call it, some people are still calling it the Internet of Things, but we know we're even connecting human brains now to the Internet. And humans usually take umbrage if you call them a thing, so we'll call it the Internet of Everything. But even human brains being connected now, the number of attack vectors that are now open to an adversary are just proliferating at an amazing rate. With each new physical element that now steps up and takes membership in the world of cyber by joining the Internet of Everything, again, the attack vectors for would be terrorists, other criminals, or just
sure.
proliferating.
And I think for, you know, our purposes today, we're really talking about business interest, financial interest. So you're switching from going from the FBI, coming up with this counter cyber terrorism, and moving into the private sector. How did that transition work for you, and why were they able to utilize your knowledge in a way that were able to build their defense systems?
Well, and I'll share this at the conference, but one of the writers I liked most over the last few years was Tom Friedman. In his book, The World is Flat, you know, we liked it at Dell because it had a chapter on supply chain, but I liked it because he was one of the first to point out that traditional boundaries between traditional interests are growing ever more porous, including that you might draw between, hey, government service and service and business. Even the distinctions that we used to draw quite clearly between, well, they have a P&L, they have to worry about government, not so much. A lot of those distinctions are falling to the side as that porosity starts to make the issues that both the private sector and government face when it comes to, let's say, battling cyber,
mm-hmm.
they become almost indistinguishable in terms of the really core challenges that we face. My transition from government into the private sector was really based on the strength of a model I was championing, arguing for the pulling together of cyber and physical operations under one umbrella, where we would be less likely to overlook those growing interdependencies.
Mm-hmm.
No guarantee, but maybe less likely.
Right.
So that was what catapulted me or propelled me into the private sector, and that I had an MBA and could talk the talk and look at some of those core concepts that we say are the heart of business.
Right.
Helped a little bit, but at the core, at the end of the day, some of the most challenging conundrums that we faced in business compared to those most challenging conundrums that we faced in government had at their core this creature we call the human.
The infallible human,
the
right?
The human was that commonality, and the complexities associated with almost any problem came down to that, to can you grapple with the challenges associated with that human? Sometimes we call it now the trusted insider
mm-hmm.
conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those commonalities transcend the distinctions we make between a government and the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually felt quite at home, just as much at home in the private sector as I did in government. In fact, according to the numbers, I actually had a more exciting career when it came to espionage in the private sector than I had in government. I had what we'd call two legitimate espionage cases that a lot of my peers would say, hey, is more than my fair share.
Right, I would say so.
A full career. I only had a 10-year career, and that I had two of those cases. They said, hey, you had more than your fair share. But then moving into the private sector, I actually had more than three cases of economic espionage. The complexity of which was just as great as anything I faced when I went up against Nicholson in the classic spy world.
Yeah, inside forces or outside forces when you mention espionage?
Yes.
both?
Yes. As is the case with almost any dichotomy thrown at us today, right. The answer is almost always yes. It involved both inside forces and outside forces.
Mm. How big of a threat is internal employees to someone's cybersecurity practice?
Well, again, I always stress, possibilities do not probabilities, do not actualities make. So it's always the case that there's the looming possibility that one of your trusted insiders might do you harm. It, depending on your positioning in the global marketplace, whether you're competing against, let's say, a state-owned enterprise in China, if indeed that's your position in the global marketplace, then I could say, hey, that possibility moves out into the realm of the probability,
right,
to perhaps teetering on the actuality. And the answer to your question is almost always established retrospectively after, of course, that insider hurts you. But if you look at the headlines of the day of the major newspapers over in America over the last few years, you know, to say that it teeters more in the realm of the probable or maybe even the inevitable actuality, the evidence is there.
Right.
So if you're a corporation, particularly a public corporation that has a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, the probability of that threat actually materializing is sufficiently well established now that if you're not doing something to mitigate that, you're going to have some tough questions to answer downstream.
And that's kind of the paradigm that we're working out of, that this is inevitable. It's not today, it's not tomorrow, but if you have something of value, someone's going to try to come and get it.
Well, and that's generally been the case when, you know, throughout time in history. That's how the criminal mind works.
Right.
You know, if I can steal it rather than going through the other effort, then let me do that. That the way the threat has presented itself over the last few years is actually reached the point, and I kind of feel responsible in part because it was my generation of warfighter security professionals that sort of had to step back, take a deep breath, and sort of accept the reality of what we saw before us. The inevitability that you just mentioned, it was almost, and we crafted this mantra, not if, but when, not if, but when. And you almost had to do that, and I'll talk a little bit about this next week.
Okay.
But that inevitability gave way to that mantra that we used with our business hats on, almost to protect ourselves in the corporate environments that we were in, so that we had massaged the expectations of our leadership so that when the compromise happened, rather than being summarily fired, we could turn the discussion to something a little more productive, like you know, how well did we identify our key assets? How well did we enclave them? How quickly did we identify the attack? How quick, timed from detection to expulsion? We expelled them quickly. That becomes the discussion rather than, hey, McClurg, you're fired.
And that's kind of what we're going to be focusing on during this cybersecurity conference. And I wanted to mention for those who may be listening that we're not just talking to the IT professionals at this cybersecurity conference, but we want to target everyone, the CEOs, the CFOs, the HR professionals, to say everybody needs to know what their assets are. Everybody needs to know what their vulnerabilities are, and here's where you can learn it.
In fact, that's a good segue to the point I often like to make, is that classically we always thought of security as the guns, gates, guards, and geeks over there, that what they do over there.
Right.
The way the threat is materialized now, and this has been borne out if you look at who got fired in the Target affair and some of the Equifax and some of these others, it wasn't the security mope, it wasn't just the security mope, it was the CIO generally and the CEO, which says and sends a message to the MBA schools of America. If you're not training your MBAs, they're going to go out there and going to be the next CEO to understand that security is no longer the sole purview of those guys who are there, but is something, an obligation owned by everyone, then you're going to miss the mark. And by that, it doesn't mean that you all have to have the same expertise down into the ones and zeros as some of them.
Right.
But there's a basic level of familiarity that we all have to have in order to survive in the connected world that we have today.
I mean, even mentioning CEOs, CFOs, CIOs, what if you're just, a mom and pop shop, or you're running a pizza place or the car wash down the street? This is just as important for them. We have a saying here at the chamber that kind of goes with cybersecurity, that if you collect it, you must protect it. If you have valuable information, regardless of the size, you need to somehow know how to protect it.
And absolutely. And though there was a time in the past when that mom and pop might be able to wrap themselves in a strategy called security by obscurity.
There you go.
Those days are gone because the bad guys know that in a connected world, the best way they have to get at what they really want to get at is to look for the mom and pop who haven't spent the time, energy, and effort in bolstering their security practice to go after them undermine them, and once they've got that position established, to use the relationship they have with a larger target as the conduit through which they're going to get after what they really want. In a connected world, we all have a mutual obligation to each other to protect these interests. Otherwise, the bad guys are smart enough to know how to target the weak link and then to follow a compromise of that weak link down to what they truly want to get.
So the big guys should be even concerned about the little guys because they can be the gateway.
Well, absolutely, because we're all just one big one.
Right.
In a connected world. And the big guys, shame on us if we're not appreciate, well, we do. We've long appreciated that connectedness. And I've got wounds that bear no scar yet, still very fresh, that tell and taught me that particular lesson. You've got to pay attention to the outer periphery. You've got to pay attention to your weakest links, the mom and pops, anybody with whom you have a connected relationship in supply chains that are growing ever more complex and attenuated. You've got to pay attention to that because the bad guys are.
Mm-hmm. So for the mom and pop shops, people that are the entrepreneurs and the small business owners who may be listening, what give them the first five steps into building a cybersecurity plan.
Well, and that's changing and it's evolving. You know, given the complexity of how the threat has come at us, the security industry has really promulgated what they call a defense in depth model, the complexity, resources, and cost of which is just, you know, staggering. So for a mom and pop shop to say, well, you mean that defense in depth is I'm going to have to figure out how to somehow chew up that huge elephant? That was the old paradigm and model, and that's why, again, a lot of people threw up their hands saying, you know, it's not if but when we're going to get compromised, because the mom and pops just can't get their arms around that.
Right.
And when you consider that the latest figures still show that almost all of our compromises, like 90% of all the compromises, are still traced back to malware.
Mm-hmm.
We have an opportunity now that with the power of AI and machine learning, we have a solution that can knock down 99.9% of that 90% at a cost that's very small, that's very manageable, does not require a lot of tech savviness to manage and to work on your endpoints is where that's attacking.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of technology, it's kind of come to our rescue. I often say it's liberated us, particularly the mom and pops, from the need of having complex, very involved structures, very resource-intensive structures, very costly infrastructures with solutions that can finally start performing for us at the end point when it comes to this 90% figure attributable to malware that gives way to these compromises. If you can start knocking that down at the level of 99.7%, it's a game changer for the moms and pops, the small shops out there.
But how do you keep up? I mean,
well, that's the old model paradigm somewhat.
Okay.
Math models and artificial intelligence, we actually ran the WannaCry virus when it came out back against our 2015 version of our math model.
Okay.
You know, standing in 2015, say, how are you going to keep up with these innovative minds that eventually down the stream 2 years later are going to come up with WannaCry? Well, we took the WannaCry as it presented itself, went back in time, as if we could travel back, to the status of the strength of our math model in 2015, ran it against the math model, and the math model won. So if you were to ask me in 2015, John, how are you going to keep up with something that's coming at us in 2017, and I'll tell you it's going to be called WannaCry, I said, I'm not sweating about keeping up because our model right now has demonstrated strength that it's going to take on and be able to succeed against what's coming at us in 2019 and 2020. Could the human brain alone work at keeping up? See, that's what your paradigm, your question presupposes. I was going to try and do this, keeping up with the cognitive limitations of the old human mind. We're going to leverage the power of our new partner, artificial intelligence and machine learning, to keep up. That's how we're doing it.
Interesting. Okay.
Exciting times.
It is exciting times. Well, if you want to hear more from John, attend our conference. There's still time. The Salt Lake Chamber's Cybersecurity Conference takes place March 15th at the Hilton Hotel in Salt Lake City from 8 a.m. till noon. Tickets are $85 and include breakfast. And you can find more information on our website. Visit slchamber.com. John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.